blame. Huddled with her feet toward the eternal flame, she had listened while the winds howled, rattling the doors as if something were trying to enter. Most often, stories were told as if they had happened to the speaker, or to a close friend if the hero died, a frequent occurrence. Few of the forest stories were pleasant. No one found fortune, or their lost love. Each ended in misery, or death. Little wonder, then, that Persephone was amazed by what she found beyond the forest eaves. Trees with trunks larger than a roundhouse soared to astounding heights, supporting a vast green roof. Shafts of golden light pierced the canopy, painting complex and shifting patterns on a carpet of needles. Moss-covered rocks and beds of old leaves lent a softness similar to Sarah's wool-filled home. At one point, Persephone spotted a pair of deer. Delicate and beautiful, they stood with heads raised and ears cocked. She glanced away for a moment, and when she looked back, the two had vanished, as if they'd been apparitions. Suri was right. This was a home of gods, and the best was still to come. The two had been climbing steadily since entering the trees, and Persephone wondered how they would be able to go much farther if the pitch grew any steeper. Then Suri led her to a crevice in the slope, where water sprayed down a tumble of rocks where dirt had been washed away by a falling stream. The water splashed and gathered in pools that overflowed to create a tall, wet, and rocky staircase. A dreamy mist rose, watering lichen and turning the stone a glossy black. "It's beautiful!" Persephone shouted as she followed Suri up an irregular set of slick stone steps. Climbing the steps was easier than navigating the dead leaves and thorn bushes covering the hillside, but the ascent was steep and arduous. Persephone had to stop several times to rest, making Suri flop down on a rock above her, where she'd sit, swinging her slender legs impatiently. When they were near the top, Persephone took a moment to look back down. They were quite high, and the cascade appeared smaller, somehow, less majestic. Still, the play of water among the rocks was lovely. Movement near the bottom caught Persephone's attention. Three men were in the process of climbing up. Sackett was easy to identify. His beard was short, and his dark hair hung straight and reached well past his shoulders. The other two were just as easy to recognize. One had a patch over a missing eye, the other lacked a hand. Adler's patch was small enough to reveal part of the scar where the bear had gouged him. He continually shifted his head from side to side, making up for the loss of vision. Hegner had it the worst of the three. He was heavier, and lacking a hand, he couldn't scramble up the rocks. "What are you doing out here?" Persephone called down cheerily. Although the forest wasn't as frightening as she'd expected, Persephone appreciated the company. The bear was still out there.
"I was about to ask you the same thing,"
Sackett answered. Suri, who nimbly climbed back down to where Persephone stood, asked, "You know these men?"
"Yes, they're from the Dol, brave men who were with my husband when he hunted the Brown."
"Mina doesn't like them."
Suri bent down and stroked the wolf.
"She is an excellent judge of character."
Persephone looked at the wolf.
"Probably just doesn't like the spears. Sackett is our new chieftain's shield. We'll be in good hands with him."
Looking back down the cascade, she shouted,
"Are you out hunting?"
"Yes, we are,"
Sackett shouted back.
"I don't suppose I could persuade you to travel with us for a while. I'd love an escort."
"Certainly. Just wait for us to catch up," Sackett said.
Persephone waited as they struggled up the wet stones, using the butts of their spears for stability.
Their progress was made more difficult by the large wooden shields slung on their backs.
"The trees are talking," Suri said.
The girl's head was tilted up, watching the leaves overhead.
"They are? What are they?"
Suri held up a finger to stop her, then narrowed her eyes, listening. Persephone listened too, but all she heard was the wind rustling branches.
"What are you doing out here?"
Sackett asked. The man had given up trying to avoid the pools and waded through knee-deep water, soaking his sandals and matting the hair on his legs so that it looked like fur. "There is such a thing as being too hairy," Persephone thought. Despite his luxuriant black mane, Sackett wasn't a handsome man. In addition to all the hair, his deeply sunk eyes beneath a jutting brow gave him a serious, gaunt appearance.
"I know it sounds ridiculous, but we're going to talk to a tree," Persephone explained.
Sackett stopped just two rocks down, catching his breath.
"Did you say, talk to a tree?"
"Yes,"
Persephone pointed at the girl.
"This is Suri, and her wolf, Mina. She's our new mystic, who studied under Tura. She's listening to them right now."
The tattoos on Suri's face made her look serious again. She stared at Sackett, and, like Mina, she didn't appear happy.
"Yeah, well, I think it would be best if Suri and her wolf were on their way," Sackett said.
"Oh, there's no need to worry," Persephone said. "Mina is perfectly tame, and Suri's our guide."
"She's not from the doll. She needs to go."
"The trees say they know these men. Murderers who can't be trusted," Suri told Persephone. "Suri, hunting animals isn't murder. We rely on the meat they bring. We'd all starve if they didn't."
"I said get!" Sackett shouted, in a sharp tone that was frightening enough to cause Persephone to jump.
But Suri remained oblivious. Mina was not. With bared teeth and raised fur, the wolf growled. Sackett sighed.
"Can't say I didn't try."
He pulled the shield off his back and looked down at the progress of Adler and Hegner, who were almost up to them.
"Adler, go round left. Stump, go right. We're gonna have to kill this wolf."
"Don't call me Stump,"
Hegner told Sackett.
"You aren't killing anything," Persephone exclaimed. "Your weapons are making Mina nervous, that's all. Suri, can you calm her down?"
The men kept advancing.
"Adler, you come up. Hegner, stay where you are. I'll block it in. Then Adler can slay it. He has the best angle."
"I order you to stop,"
Persephone yelled. Sackett and Adler chuckled, looking at each other, amused. Persephone had always known laughter to be a warm, friendly sound, but this was cold. The noise a row might make when tucking itself in for the night on a bed of human bones.
"Don't care what you do with the wolf or the girl. We can move their bodies after," Sackett said. "But no cuts on Persephone. When a body is found, it has to look like an accident. I'm guessing she took a bad fall on these rocks."
"What?"
Persephone couldn't believe her ears. Her mind struggled to make sense of the absurd and failed. Adler fanned out to flank Mina. Suri finally took her eyes off the canopy and looked squarely at Adler. She pointed at him and announced,
"The trees say you'll die first. They told me you offended Wogan. He doesn't appreciate killing in his woods."
Suri turned to Sackett.
"The trees tell me you will die second. Not because you deserve to live longer, but so you'll have time to understand. They say you won't be going to Elysium or even Rel. The paths to paradise are shut to you."
Your spirit will enter the darkness of Nifril.
Sackett's eyes narrowed.
I don't need to be a mystic to predict the future. I'm not the one about to die, little girl.
Yes, you are, Suri said. As usual, the girl's tone was wildly out of context. She sounded pleased, almost giddy, a child excited to have been called upon because she knew the answer.
And I get to watch.
She's crazy, Sackett said. Go on, Adler, kill the wolf.
Now, Mina, Suri whispered.
Adler was shifting his weight to his back foot and raising his spear when Mina sprang. 100 pounds of snarling teeth and claws landed on him. Perched on a ledge of slick stone, the man went over. Shield and spear clattered on the rocks, swept away by the water. Adler and Mina both fell one shelf down. Adler landed on a boulder. The back of his head struck the rock, making a hollow sound, a muffled crack. Whether he was dead or merely unconscious was impossible to say, but the one-eyed man wasn't getting up. Sackett raised his spear to throw it at Mina, but Persephone grabbed the shaft. Although she had hold of it with both hands, Sackett jerked it free and slammed the pole of the weapon into her stomach. Persephone collapsed to the rocks, gasping for air.
"Sackett!"
Hegner shouted. The one-handed man used his stump to gesture wildly down the cascade. Still gasping to fill her lungs, Persephone saw two more men coming up the rocks. Both were strangers. The man out front was tall, beardless, slender, and dressed in shimmering robes, with a silver torque around his neck in the fashion of a wealthy chieftain. But Persephone knew every chieftain of the 7 Rulan clans, and hadn't seen anyone like him before. The second man was as different from the first as a wolf was from a dog. Large and muscled, he had a tempest of black hair and a bristling beard. His clothing was as intriguing as his friend's. Dressed mostly in leather, he also wore a black-and-white checkered limor, bearing the pattern of Clan Durea. Sackett tracked Mina's movements, but the wolf didn't attack. She leapt back to Suri's side. The two women looked past him toward the strangers. Persephone shouted,
"Help! They're going to kill us!"
With her newfound breath, she started to crawl away from Sackett as best she could.
"This is a private matter," Sackett called out to the approaching men. "None of your business. Be on your way."
"The lady just invited us," the slender man said as he passed Hegner without incident.
"You're a stranger here. Best keep it that way."
"I'd rather not, so allow me to introduce myself. My name is Malcolm."
The man approached quickly as he spoke, brandishing a spear with both hands. Behind him, the larger man struggled to keep pace.
"By what right or authority do you plan to harm these women?"
The two strangers navigated the last of the rocks that Hegner hadn't yet bothered with, and stood on equal footing with Sackett, albeit across a shallow pool. The big man had a hand on a naked sword wedged in his belt.
A sword?
Persephone had never seen a man with a sword. They were the weapons of gods, and this elaborately decorated one shone brightly. On his back, she spotted the hilt of another.
"Two swords! Grandmother of all, who are these men?"
"Well, Malcolm," Sackett said, "you must be hard of hearing, so I'll say it again. This is a private matter, and none of your concern."
"You, sir, are a coward preying on the weak. You're not particularly handsome, either. I'd go so far as to say you're genuinely ugly. Now, let me tell you what I think about your mother. She's—"
Sackett took a splashing step through the pool, separating them, and jabbed out with his weapon. Malcolm stepped back, knocking the spear aside with his own. Sackett advanced, shuffling his way across the cascade, fighting the thrust of water as he sought to close the distance. but Malcolm backed up just as quickly. The man wearing the Durea-patterned Lee Moore rushed forward, donning his shield and pulling the sword from his belt. Sackett raised his shield, expecting a strike that didn't come. The Durean didn't swing. Instead, he stepped in front of Malcolm and planted his feet on firm ground. Malcolm moved aside, choosing to watch the fight he'd started.
"Who are you?"
Hackett said, looking nervously at the metal blade.
The big man said nothing and stood in a slight crouch, shield up, sword back. "This doesn't concern you,"
Hackett repeated once more.
"Didn't say it did," the Drain replied. "Then go away." "So you can murder these women?"
Malcolm asked.
"I think not. Perhaps it's you who ought to go away."
"Be careful," Persephone said, having regained her feet. "He's skilled with a spear."
Sackett sneered at her, then lunged toward the Drain. The big man blocked the thrust and brought the sword across his body. The blade caught the end of the spear and cut through the wooden shaft. The sharpened stone tip clattered onto the rocks. Sackett leapt back in fear.
"Egnar, get around behind,"
he started to say, but stopped after seeing what the rest had already noticed. Egnar was climbing down and was already close to the bottom of the cascade.
"Tetlan's witch! You lousy cull!"
Sackett shouted after him. Throwing the remainder of his spear at the Durean, Sackett turned and started his own retreat. Behind him, Mina growled menacingly. Perhaps he thought the wolf was about to leap, or maybe that Malcolm would throw his spear. Either way, Sackett rushed his descent over the slime-covered rocks. Persephone cringed even before he fell. Sackett slipped and dropped more than 5 feet, hitting his back on one edge and then another. His body continued its way down the water-sprayed staircase, falling 4 times. He grunted with each slap against the rocks. The third ledge caught his right foot and spun him, making the last fall head first. His skull didn't crack like Adler's, but the blow bent his neck sharply. Sackett lay on the froth of the stream, groaning and shaking his head in agony. His eyes were squeezed shut, and his mouth pulled into a grimace, showing teeth. He didn't try to get up. Except for his head, he didn't move at all.
"Help!"
he cried as the force of the water pushed his body, inching it toward another drop.
"I can't move! I can't move!"
Persephone took a step down. Bent over, she used her hands as well as her feet. Where the water flowed over the rocks, they were as slick as ice. She inched down, knowing she'd be too late. In the back of her mind, she wondered how the death trap of a cascade had seemed so beautiful on the way up. She descended only 3 ledges before Sackett screamed. The ceaseless flow of water had pushed him down 1 more ledge. He didn't fall far, but he ended up in a good-sized pool. Landing on his back, Sackett couldn't lift his face far enough above the water to breathe. Only his forehead and eyes breached the surface. Persephone moved faster, scrambling over the rocks. Then, like Sackett, she too slipped. Her foot came off a stone, and Persephone fell on her back. Her elbow and hip took the worst of it, sending jolts of pain through her side. Slipping farther and hurried along by the push of the stream, she cried out, desperately clawing at the slick stones for a non-existent hold. A hand grabbed her wrist. She felt fingers latch on. A moment later, she was dangling by one arm. Persephone came off the rocks, pulled upward. Her feet continued to scramble for traction. It didn't matter. The arm lifting her wasn't letting go, and had no trouble drawing her up. Another arm wrapped her waist. Pulled tight, Persephone was pressed against the soft kiss of white and black checkered wool. Below them, Sackett peered back like a terrified pond frog. His head jerked once, then twice, and slowly his eyes closed, and his head disappeared below the surface. At the top of the slope, Persephone sat in the fingered roots of a huge tree. Wet from the fall, her black dress stuck to her skin. The big man had offered his checkered limor, and she wrapped it around her shoulders. The wool was rough, nothing like the plush cloth Sarah wove. But it was warm, warmer than expected, and she held it close. She continued to look down the course of the cascade that sprayed below. Persephone thought she could still see Adler's body, lying across the rocks, a dark form causing the water to froth. Adler was dead, probably had been from the moment his head hit the rock. Hegna was gone.
What just happened?
It was a thought repeated more than once while she sat there. Persephone was still trying to puzzle it out, still trying to make sense of insanity. Sackett, Adler One-Eye, and Hegna, whom Persephone no longer had any trouble thinking of as the Stump, had tried to kill her. Although she wouldn't describe any of them as friends, they certainly weren't enemies. They were neighbors and clan members, which meant they were family. If it had been only one, she could have reasoned he'd gone crazy. But they had been working together. Since the attack, no one had said much, except Suri, who had coaxed everyone to follow her up the ridge. Persephone hadn't needed much prompting. She wanted to move, to get off those deadly rocks. By the time they reached the top, she was shaking so badly she needed to sit down.
I almost died. Was almost murdered.
The idea took a long time to root in her mind. Once it had, the realization stole the strength from her legs. Bruised, wet, confused and frightened, she hugged herself, shivering. The Doraean must have thought she was cold, because that was when he had given her his cloth.
"You're all right, then?"
the big man asked. She nodded, clutching herself.
"I don't know why they did that. They attacked for no reason.
Do you think Hegna will come back?" "No, he looked pretty scared. That's probably the last you'll see of him."
Persephone let out a breath.
"You're right. In all likelihood, he's on his way to Warwick. He'd never show his face again in Wren. Conagher would cut his head off."
"Your husband?"
"No," she told him. "Conagher is the chieftain of Dal Ren."
"I thought his name was Reglan."
"Reglan was the chieftain, and my husband. But he died, and Conagher rules now."
The big man nodded, then crouched on one knee to scratch behind Mina's ears. As he did, she noticed a circular bronze medal dangling from his neck. Bronze was the metal of the gods. She'd never seen a man with any, and this was finely engraved with the image of interwoven vines or branches. So far, the Doraean hadn't offered his name, but Persephone was convinced she knew who he was.
"Thank you. I..."
She looked at the mystic.
"We owe you our lives. I'm Persephone. This is Suri. And you are..."
"Men who value our privacy,"
the Doraean said quickly, and shot a stern glance at his companion.
"Just wayfarers on our way south."
"It has to be him."
"Traveling a bit light, aren't you?" she asked.
Between them, they had only one blanket and a small sack that couldn't hold much food. What they lacked in supplies, they made up for in weapons. Over the big man's shoulder was an extra sword. A copper sword.
"It's definitely him."
"We live off the land," he replied, looking away.
"Are we still going?"
Suri asked.
The girl was sitting cross-legged on the ground, playing a child's game with a loop of string, weaving patterns between her fingers. Persephone again glanced down the slope of the cascade. She didn't know what to do.
The thought of plunging deeper into the forest. Where are you going?
Malcolm interrupted Persephone's thought.
Well, we were going to... Well, it's actually hard to explain.
Is it far?
Persephone looked at the mystic.
Is it?
Surrey shook her head as she continued to weave patterns with the string looped between her fingers.
Well, if it's not far, I suppose we could escort you,
Malcolm offered. This brought a scowl from the big man, which his companion ignored.
And if we did, do you think you could repay our kindness with some food?
Malcolm gave a hopeful smile.
Yes, of course. When we get back to the doll, I'll see that both of you get a good hot meal and a place to sleep for the night.
Then we'd love to help, Malcolm said.
Persephone got to her feet while momentum was on her side. She continued to clutch the lemur to her neck. She wasn't cold, but figured her rescuer wouldn't be inclined to run off as long as she kept it.
Maeve's words returned to her. Heroes like him no longer walk among us.
Suri put her string away, picked up Tura's staff, and scampered back into the deep wood, running ahead but stopping frequently to look at flowers and birds. The wolf mimicked her, or perhaps it was the other way around. With Suri, it was difficult to tell.
Malcolm, his friend, and Persephone walked side by side when the forest allowed, which was often in an area of thick canopy and scarce brush.
They continued to climb, the land always sloping upward. Before long, Persephone realized they were following a vague trail. In the open areas, it vanished, but Suri didn't hesitate or doubt. Soon they were on a ridge, where beds of old leaves sloped down to either side.
So, where are we off to?
Malcolm asked Persephone.
Well, Suri is a mystic and augur. She's taking me to an old oak somewhere up here.
Mystic?
The big man said. His voice betrayed both surprise and awe.
Yes. I know she looks young, but she was raised by Tura, a well-respected augur.
Tura was ancient. The last time I saw her, she didn't have a single hair that wasn't white. She knew everything, or could find the answers for you. She recently died, and Suri says the old oak can answer some of my questions.
May I ask what questions you have that could cause you to risk life and limb as you have?
Malcolm inquired. The thin man had a formal way of speaking that she liked. Even when she was the wife of the chieftain, no one had ever said, "May I ask?" The most surprising thing, though, was that he didn't find it strange that she was off to talk to a tree. Regardless of how he said it, Persephone was grateful for the door he'd opened. She'd been looking for a means to bring a subject up, and this was the perfect opportunity.
"We've recently learned the gods of Alenrist might have plans to attack us. All of us. All runes."
She paused, trying to determine how best to present the next part.
"I'm looking for an answer, for guidance, a way to save my people. I'm also hoping this tree can lead me to a man named... Wraith."
This drew the Duraean's stare.
"What you want with him?"
"Rumors say he has killed a Frey. People are calling him the God Killer."
"And what? You want to turn him over to the Frey? You think that will prevent a slaughter?"
"No, no, not at all,"
she said more loudly than intended, and both Suri and Mina paused to look back.
"Some call the Frey gods, but it'd be impossible to kill one if that were so. I've had some dealings with them, and I know the Frey don't respect us. We're ants to them, and if an ant bites you, do you seek out that one ant, or do you set fire to the whole colony to make sure you're not bitten again? I want to discover if this wraith really did slay a Frey, and if so, how it was done.
If one man can kill a Frey,
Others can learn as well. Her only hope might be to fight.
She caught a look between the two.
Such a hero would be welcomed in Dol Ren.
I've heard rumors about this Wraith person, too, the big man said. But I don't think they're true. Of course they are.
Malcolm frowned at his associate.
We were at the roadhouse when Wraith told his story.
Wraith didn't tell a story. A rather unpleasant traveling companion of his did, and I'm sure most of that story was lies.
Really?
Malcolm replied.
See, personally, I found it to be a beautiful tale. It moved me.
Another look, this one more irritated than the others.
Let me tell you something that I know to be true, the big man said to Persephone. The Frey are deadly. They wear metal and have weapons that can cut through ours.
Like the way you cut through Sackett's spear?
The Dorian didn't respond and merely continued walking along the ridge, looking out at the trees. Talking to him was like fishing. Reglan had tried to teach Persephone. The goal was to get a hooked fish to a net, but if you pulled too hard, the fish would fight back, break the line, and get away. The process was one of give and take, letting the fish have time to realize the cause was lost before pulling it in. Persephone decided to skip the topic and let out more line.
In ages past, during a great flood that threatened to kill our ancestors, a man named Gath united all the clans. He organized everyone in a common cause. You're speaking of the Kenig, the man said. The one who wore a crown. The chieftain of chieftains.
Yes, and I believe we are facing another similar crisis. But if the clans unite under the leadership of another Kenig, well, there are more of us than Frey in Rulin.
How would you know? The big man asked.
I told you. I was married to Chieftain Reglan. We visited all the Dals together. I've also gone to Alan Rist for the yearly meetings. Alan Rist is...
She hesitated, trying to think how to explain.
Impressive beyond words.
Malcolm helped her.
She smiled and nodded. Yes, but I didn't see many Frey. I think there are only a few hundred.
She's right, Malcolm said. I'd estimate the population at the Rist to be about 300 or 400.
Persephone was growing quite fond of Malcolm.
We have nearly 1,000 people in Dol Ren alone, Persephone said, and there's twice that in the surrounding villages.
But how many men? The Draen asked. Not boys or the elderly.
350, maybe 400.
And how many are trained to use a spear and shield? And I'm not talking about just hunting, either. Rarely do deer fight back, and bears don't plan and fortify.
How many of your men have more experience fighting than farming?
50? 100? Any?
To win against the Frey, in order to be any use at all, a man would have to train for years. And where are they going to get their weapons?
He grabbed the spear from Malcolm.
These are useless against them.
What you are talking about is impossible.
Maybe,
she said, as if a veteran of 1,000 battles. Everything she was about to say made sense in theory, but she guessed the man before her didn't deal in theories.
Yet no one says it's impossible for men to hunt large game like bears and big cats.
A bear is far more powerful than a man. Faster, too. We win because we hunt in groups. What if 10 men fought one Frey? And yes, there may only be a few hundred good fighters in Dol Ren, but there are close to 200 villages in Ren alone. And who knows how many more in Menahan, Melin, Tyre, and Warwick. We're talking thousands. And our women could fight, too.
I know I could learn to hold a spear butted against a charge.
We'd be fighting for our lives. And that's a pretty good incentive, don't you think?
The big man frowned.
Women can't fight.
Persephone shrugged.
She wanted to disagree, but that was an argument for another time. Okay, but there are female Frey in Alenris too. So, if our women can't fight, neither can theirs. Is it impossible to think 1,000 men can kill 100 Frey? And how many do the Gula have? If we all band together, we could overwhelm them with sheer numbers. Not likely to happen. The man shook his hairy head. The clans would never join together. They are more likely to fight each other. She let out more line to her fish. I see your point. It would take a man like Garth. Someone renowned. Someone everyone would agree was the bravest, strongest warrior among them. Someone who all the chieftains could kneel to and not lose the respect of their people. It would take a hero. Time to set the hook. It would take someone who'd already proved himself by killing a Frey, she said. Persephone and Malcolm continued ahead, but stopped a few steps later. The Draen had halted. You want this Wraith person to be the Keenig, he said. Persephone nodded. I think it might be our only hope to survive. That's crazy. Doesn't sound at all crazy to me, Malcolm said. I love you, Malcolm. He was practically holding out the net for her fish. You be quiet, the man snapped. You are Wraith, aren't you? Persephone asked. Wraith of Dorea, the God-Killer, wielder of the Copper Sword. Wraith glanced over his shoulder at the pommel, sighed, and then glared at Malcolm. I blame you for this, he said, and walked on. After drawing out Wraith's identity, Persephone backed off, satisfied with her progress. The three walked on in relative silence. Ahead of them, Surrey had stopped, Mina beside her. The girl seemed transfixed, staring off through an opening in the trees. When they reached her, Persephone realized they had climbed higher than she'd expected. Below them, the view was breathtaking. Forest-covered hills stretched out for miles. The shadows across the landscape indicated the hour was later than she'd realized. That's the home of Grin, Suri told them, pointing at a rocky face where the sun revealed a large cave. We aren't going up there, are we? Persephone asked. No, ma'am, the girl replied. Magda is just ahead. Magda? Malcolm inquired. The old oak, Persephone said. Surrey says it's the oldest tree in the forest. Who or what is Grin? Wraith asked. A bear, or demon, or maybe both. She killed my son, my husband, and several other men from Wren. Sounds like a good thing to avoid, then, Malcolm said. They continued on, and Surrey led them off the ridge and into a shallow basin. As tranquil a place as anything Persephone could imagine, the valley held a flower-filled meadow. In the center stood a massive tree. Lower branches, each as thick as any regular oak's trunk, rested their elbows on the ground as they extended out hundreds of feet. Her gnarled and ribbed trunk, partially covered in green moss, was mammoth. A pair of huge knots gave the tree the appearance of a gentle, wrinkled face that looked down on them with sad eyes. It was easy to see why Surrey had described Magda as holding court. Nothing but flowers grew near her. That was Magda's field, and her boughs extended the width of it like a fine gown. Surrey stopped under the tree's leaves and knelt. Mina lay beside her. The others hesitated, unsure what to do. Slowly, Surrey lifted her head to the leaves. Say hello to Magda, the oldest tree. Malcolm walked to Magda as if in a trance, and laid a hand on the oak. She is indeed a very old tree.
Magda told me once she has lived for 3,000 years,
Surrey declared. Malcolm continued to let his hands glide over the tree's bark, which was thick and gnarled with deep lines of age. She would have seen it all.
What do I do? Persephone asked Surrey. Just ask her what you want to know.
Persephone stepped forward and, looking into the knots as if they were eyes, she inquired,
Are the Frey coming? Will they attack Dol Ren?
She waited, listening, expecting to hear a booming voice. All was silent, and she looked at Surrey. The mystic shrugged.
Try something else.
Persephone glanced at Wraith.
How can I save my people?
They looked up at the leaves, Wraith wearing a nervous expression. In turn, each of them, even Mina, looked at Surrey, who scowled.
What?
Persephone said. Surrey shook her head in irritation.
Magda's being a beech.
A what? Wraith asked.
She's been quiet.
Maybe she's thinking, Malcolm said. Or she doesn't know the answers. Those are pretty weighty questions for a tree that doesn't, you know, travel much.
She talks to the other trees. They tell her all they've heard,
Surrey explained.
That's how she knows so much. She hears news from everywhere.
But how can a tree know the minds of gods? Wraith asked. Or the lay of the future?
The more you know about the past, the easier it is to define the future.
Surrey stood up.
Magda!
She shouted, causing Mina to start.
Wake up! You have visitors. This woman is an important lady. She needs to know what to do. She needs to know...
Surrey looked at Persephone.
How to save our race from extinction at the hands of the Frey.
Persephone provided.
Surrey licked her lips and then turned her attention back to the tree. Yeah, that.
Again they waited. Surrey's face scrunched up into an elaborate frown.
I don't understand. Normally...
A breeze stirred the leaves overhead, and Surrey's head snapped upward. Her eyes grew wide, and a smile spread across her face.
Welcome the gods,
Surrey said formally.
What?
Persephone asked, but Surrey held up a hand to silence her.
Heal the injured,
the mystic went on.
I don't under...
Once again Surrey waved for silence.
Follow the wolf.
The breeze died. They waited. Surrey finally nodded with a happy look.
There you go. The answer to your questions.
Persephone blinked.
That's it. Welcome the gods, heal the injured, follow the wolf. What does any of it mean?
Surrey shrugged.
I have no idea.
Chapter 9. Tight Places.
Life on the Dol was dangerous. We lived in fear of everything. Spirits, sickness, famine, wolves and bears. That spring there was less sickness and famine, and more wolves and bears. The Book of Brin.
Wraith and Mina were friends from the moment they met, but then he'd always gotten along better with animals than people. In Dorea, some of the less aggressive wolves made a living off discarded scraps. The animals were tolerated because their yipping warned when trouble came to visit. As a boy, Wraith had grown fond of many of them, but few had been as friendly, and none so large, as Mina. In Dorea, animals didn't grow big for the same reason that people didn't smile. a lack of everything. Wraith held a similarly high opinion of Surrey, who reminded him of his younger sister, the only sibling he loved. That she was a mystic, despite her young age, was astounding. Mystics were about as common as two-headed unicorns. The few who existed lived apart from the world of men, remaining untainted by influence and corruption. Having a wolf as her best friend demonstrated the sort of wisdom he appreciated. Persephone was another matter. He couldn't decide about her. She was attractive for her age. He guessed her to be about 10 years older than himself. But she had been a chieftain's wife, the worst sort of woman, and he hadn't liked the way she'd tried to manipulate him. Using others was the way of those who slept in lodges. They thought nothing of deciding the lives of others. Then there were the three men who had tried to kill her. That sort of thing didn't happen by accident. If people wanted you dead, there was likely a reason. Also, she had acted stupidly on the cascade, risking her life for a man who had tried to kill her. Still, it showed more decency than he would have expected, which gave him pause. So did the fact that she'd spoken to him, a Doraean, with respect. Such behavior would have been unusual from a farmer's wife, but she had been married to a chieftain and lived in a wealthy dal. Although it was easy to assume her actions were designed to beguile, there was a genuineness about her. Wraith was far from worldly, and no expert when it came to the ways of powerful women, but he'd always been able to tell the wolves that would bite from the ones that wouldn't. Mina! Surrey raised her brows when the wolf settled next to Wraith, nuzzling his leg. That's no way to act. You just met him. She's friendly. Wraith bent down and scrubbed the wolf's coat. No, she's not. Are you, Mina? Surrey smirked at the wolf, then shrugged. Okay. From here, follow the ridge back the way you came. Persephone, who was still staring back at the old oak, turned sharply. Wait, you're not coming with us? The mystic shook her head. No, ma'am. I live over that way. She pointed through the blur of trees. But, Persephone said, confused, I thought you came to the dal to stay. Did you hear that, Mina? She's a strange one. We only came to tell you the news. Then there was the whole business of waiting on the trees to wake up, but that's done. You have your answer, so we can go home. Surrey took a few bounding steps, causing Mina to leap from Wraith's side and chase after her. This made the girl grin. Still likes me best. She took two more steps, then stopped and looked up at the sky. Better be quick, Mom. Night appears to be in an awful hurry. Then, without so much as a wave, the girl ran off, the wolf chasing her through the trees. Good... bye. Persephone called after her. And thank you! She continued to stare until the mystic vanished, swallowed by the green. Persephone looked back at the big oak and said, That's it. I nearly die, and all I get are riddles, not even good ones. Wraith wasn't certain if she was speaking to him, the tree, or to herself. Taking a breath, she sighed. Unfolding Wraith's lemur, she pulled it over her head like a hood and walked forward. This way, I guess. Wraith followed Persephone through the trees. Malcolm had been slow to join them, lingering a while longer by himself. If we hurry, we can have a hot meal, Persephone said, following the faint trail they had made in the grass on the way in. You two like mutton? Sarah's working her way through a ewe Delwyn butchered. I've lived with them since my husband's death, and I'm sure you'd be welcomed. She's down to the shank, which isn't the best, but... It sounds like a holiday feast, Malcolm said, running to catch up. I take it you're hungry.
Famished, good lady, famished. We've been living on a sparse diet of nuts, mushrooms, and the rare squirrel or rabbit, which between us doesn't amount to much more than a bite or two.
Back up on the ridge, they travelled in a line, their feet ploughing loudly through dead leaves. The light cut through the gaps at a sharp angle. Trunks and plants were splashed with brilliant gold, and long shadows stretched out from the base of every tree.
"I've heard of your husband," Wraith told Persephone, as he walked behind her. "They say he was old." She nodded.
"Over 60 years.
But you're not so old."
"Thank you."
Persephone glanced back at him with a curious look.
"I think..." "I'm just saying your husband was a lucky man. Not only did he live a long time, but he was blessed with a young wife."
She laughed.
"A nice sound. I've not known Dorian men to be so charming."
"Ha!"
Malcolm scoffed. Persephone turned to peer at the slender man marching along at the rear of their parade.
"Why do you laugh?"
"Wraith isn't what most would describe as charming."
"How would you know?"
Wraith asked. "I've been with you night and day for who knows how long now, and you've never struck me as charming."
"You're not a beautiful woman,"
Wraith replied.
"Beautiful?"
Persephone said.
"Charming or not, you are certainly most kind. But there must be a terrible shortage of girls in Dorea if you..."
Persephone froze in place, and her hand flew to her mouth in horror.
"I'm so sorry. I didn't mean... I..."
She bit her lower lip in agony. Malcolm looked at Wraith with a bewildered expression, as the three stood listening to the wind and the leaves. When she didn't say anything else, Wraith asked, "What?" She stared at him a moment longer, as embarrassment slowly shifted to surprise.
"You don't know?"
"Know what?"
"Dorea. The Frey."
She shook her head, her hand still lingering over her lips.
"They destroyed Dorea, and we think Nadak as well."
Wraith stared at her, puzzled.
People often said things that didn't make sense. Those who talked a lot were the most prone to the practice. Words spilled out of their mouths with little thought behind them.
Persephone might be one of those, but she didn't seem the sort to lie, and there would be no point in making up such a thing.
"What are you talking about?"
Persephone looked to Malcolm for help, but he remained silent, leaning on his spear.
"A group of men from Nadak came to Wren. They said they saw it themselves. The Frey killed everyone."
Then, more quietly, she added,
"They burned the villages, as well as the Dahl."
"The Frey? Did that?"
Wraith asked, trying to picture such a thing in his mind. The gods had never attacked Dorea before, but he found it disturbingly easy to imagine. He looked to Malcolm.
"Is this possible? Would they do that?"
I expected them to come after us, not your people, but I suppose it's possible."
"How many villages? Which ones?"
Wraith asked Persephone.
His question made her cringe.
"All of them. The report I heard said..."
She frowned.
"What?"
"They found no survivors. None. You might be the last living Dorean."
She said more after that, but Wraith had stopped listening. Malcolm spoke as well, but Wraith walked away. He had a vague sense of trudging down the ridge, with them following. He wanted to think, needed to think, but couldn't.
Once, when Herkimer had been training Wraith, he was struck in the head with a wooden mallet. He'd collapsed, but was still conscious, his father looming above. Herkimer yelled, but Wraith couldn't hear. The words were faint and muffled. Wraith's thoughts lost in a fog. That's how he felt now. The world had stopped, and when it started again, his first thought was that Persephone must be mistaken. Dorea couldn't be gone. As poor as they were, his people numbered in the thousands. They lived in hundreds of settlements from the Forks to the High Spear Valley. They couldn't all be gone.
Why would anyone destroy a place as insignificant as Clempton?
Wraith, do you know where you're going? Malcolm asked.
Wraith stopped. They still travelled along the ridge, but the hardwood trees had given way to spruce and cedar as the three plodded uphill.
Are you all right? Persephone asked.
I'm fine.
She looked at Wraith for a long moment as if she were going to offer a dissenting opinion.
We're going back to Dol Ren, right? Malcolm asked. I don't remember walking downhill at any point when we were on our way to the Oak.
Persephone paused and turned around.
You're right. We didn't. They were in the middle of an endless group of trees that were different from the ones Wraith remembered passing through earlier.
We should have turned off the ridge at some point, I think, Malcolm said. The world beneath the canopy was darkening. The conifers blocked more sun than the hardwoods, but not enough to account for the growing gloom. The piercing shafts of sun were gone. Night was coming, and it was already hard to tell where one tree stopped and another began.
I suppose we should head back to where we started going up again, then...
Persephone was interrupted by a not-too-distant howl.
Do you think that's Mina?
Malcolm asked,
his voice concerned but hopeful.
Came from the other way, Persephone replied.
Out there.
She nodded her head at the forest to their left. Another howl echoed from slightly to the right of the first.
Maybe we should go this way.
Persephone walked briskly in the opposite direction of the howls. Wraith followed after her with Malcolm in tow.
Soon they were skidding down a steep slope, ploughing through brown needles still damp from a recent rain. The deeper they went, the darker the forest grew. Near the bottom, the air became noticeably cooler, and the floor of the forest was green with ferns. They waded into a grove of knee-high fiddleheads, where they discovered a creek.
Is this the stream that goes to the cascade?
Persephone asked.
Maybe,
Malcolm replied. His voice sounded strained. Persephone followed the flow of water downhill. They trudged onward, but nothing looked familiar. Howls continued, closer than before. Down off the ridge, the eerie sounds bounced off tree trunks and echoed back. Wraith couldn't determine where the howls came from, but he was certain of one thing. There was more than one. Persephone picked up their pace as they continued downhill through brush and over stones. With each step, it seemed the world grew darker, and the forest changed. Evergreens transformed into black curtains, scattered birches became slender, staring ghosts. Rocks and boulders, hidden in shadows, took on the shapes of crouching animals waiting to pounce. In the growing dark, he felt closed in, blinded and trapped by the closeness of the trees.
I'm not sure I know where we are,
Persephone told them while pausing beside the creek.
I don't think any of us does,
Malcolm said.
Persephone rubbed her arms. Well, at this point I'm...
She stopped. Movement. Creeping figures emerged from the undergrowth. Three wolves, all black, with sharp white teeth, snarled through curled lips. The trio came out slowly. Too slowly.
Get behind me,
Wraith ordered, drawing the Frey sword and backing up. Malcolm clutched the spear in front of him.
Just point and stick, right?
Before Wraith could answer,